This is James Jude Courtney. I'm the new Michael Myers, and you're listening to the Epic Film Guys podcast. Thanks for being here, guys.
Did you have something caught in your... It sounded like you were choking on something there.
Hey, hey, you!
No,
who
get him out of here!
Who the fuck do you think you're talking to?
He's gonna mummy, ruin it.
Yummy mummy hobster.
Yummy mummy hobster.
Yummy mummy, it's yummy in my tummy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another very, very special spotlight. Not just for the Epic Film Guys, but we are joined by two amazing guests. We are joined by Trisha and Shauna from the Two Girls on a Bench podcast. And this is a big get for us, Justin. This is a big get because these wonderful ladies are the 2018 People's Choice Awards winner.
Award winners.
From the podcast awards.
They won an award.
They
won a major award.
The smattering is special. Only special shows get the smattering. I know it seems insulting. Aww. It's not.
Thank you.
It's our highest honor. Welcome to the Epic Film Guys podcast. How are you guys tonight?
Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was a very warm welcome.
Yeah, nice matter. No, it was great. Yeah, we were...
Maybe next time like a slow clap. I don't know. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah, no, we're really glad to be here. We've been fans for a while and
we're excited to hear your thoughts on this exciting film.
We've got so much to talk about tonight. Justin's here. He didn't get to join us for Nosferatu, which was a shame, but that was amazing. We're doing this all as part of All the Horror. So please head over to Twitter right now. Follow at AllTheHorror18. Check out and search the hashtag AllTheHorror on Twitter. We are collaborating with a ton of shows, dozens of podcasts, collaborating, putting together horror-related content all month long. And I've got to say, ladies, I'll let you speak for yourselves on this, but I've got to say for us, it has been incredible.
Yeah, no, this is, it's been amazing, and it's the collaboration is insane.
Yeah, like, it's been really fun, and it's fun to meet people and talk to them and actually will, like, see them, and it's such a different experience because we're just used to being alone.
Even well, Justin?
The two of us.
even Justin.
Even
no,
Justin.
The community is so amazing and supportive, and just to put faces, and I mean, we already know everybody's voices, and we talk to each other like we've known each other for a long ass time. Yep. On that, you know, like when we communicate, so it's just the next logical step.
It's been fun.
It's super fun.
Also, horror is fun.
It's crazy. Like, we're recording this early in the month. This isn't going to release until like what, the 22nd, I think. But so far in the month, it's been crazy. New episode every single day of podcasters collaborating and working together for horror content. So it's amazing. It's really, really amazing. But Justin's here.
It's nice to see that everybody agrees that October is the best month.
It's my favorite month ever. It's my favorite season ever. It's my favorite genre ever. I mean, I live for this shit. I was celebrating October in halfway through August this year. Like, I'm that guy. I'm usually the guy that gets pissed when people start putting out Christmas decorations at the end of September.
Danny's going to stab you with the belt.
There are those people. But, you know, for some reason this year, I'm like, fuck it. Like, I just been getting in the horror Halloween mode. And I mean, I live horror all year long, but this is a special month for me. Very special.
Absolutely.
Of course, again, we're recording this super, super early. Super early. 5th of October. But Justin's already seen the new Halloween movie, which by the time this episode releases will have come out. But let's all just take a moment to hate Justin for just a moment.
A lot of time and effort went into that, you know, and a lot of emotional distress. I went through, I really thought, like, even though I walked up to the door about to see the damn thing, that it wasn't going to happen, so.
Wow. Well, we are thrilled, absolutely thrilled, ladies, to have you here tonight.
Yes.
And we are not talking about Halloween. We're not talking about any of that stuff tonight. We're going back in time to William Friedkin's, just one of probably the most recognized, an absolute classic of the genre, William Friedkin's The Exorcist. The original version, not the director's cut, which I didn't know was a thing until Justin was like, which version are you watching? And I'm like, what?
Yeah, no, there's definitely, and there's a lot of controversy between fans on which version is better, because a lot of people grew up watching the director's cut as their first time view of the film, and a lot of people grew up, obviously, a lot more people grew up watching the original version. So, yeah, there is some controversy to be had, and maybe I will let you know which one I prefer, personally, during this discussion.
We're going to get there a little bit later, but you promised us, you actually promised us a little intro for the film. So,
not really intro, just you know what the movie is. For the uninitiated, if you actually exist outside of Nick, The Exorcist is a 1973 supernatural horror film directed by Academy Award winner William Friedkin, based on the best-selling novel by William Peter Blatty of the same name. It's about the demonic possession of a 12-year-old girl named Regan, played by Linda Blair, and her mother's attempts to win her back through an exorcism conducted by two priests.
Boom.
And it's also one of the biggest, highest grossing horror films of all time.
How dare you?
So there's that too. Paul, there's that too.
Keep it. Why Paul have to jump in here? I don't know. So because you ladies are the guests on the show.
Yes.
I want to start with you guys. And we did this during Nosferatu as well. This is not going to be this is a review of the film kind of thing. This film is over 40 years old. There's no need for that kind of nonsense. Instead, we're just going to discuss it. We're just going to have fun. And when was the first time that you remember seeing The Exorcist? I want to start with Shauna.
Well, I don't know if I saw it before they re-released the director's cut, but we went to see the director's cut in the movie theater. It was released in, like, it was in the 90s at some point, think, like the late 90s.
I don't know.
I don't remember.
I think it was 99, actually, was when they released it. Yeah.
So we went to see it in the movie theater, and I can't remember if I saw it before that, because that one stuck in my head more. With the spider walk and all that. So that was like the first time I saw it. And then I hadn't watched it since then because it scared the shit out of me.
Shauna's really afraid of demons a lot.
I am so afraid of demons. You have no idea. Like, I can't watch any of those. Like, Emily Rose, like, that one broke me. But, like, watching this one again.
I feel like after Emily Rose, that's when you had to, like, cut demons out
because
of your life.
Because I wake up at 3 a.m. like every fucking day and I'm just like, shit. I'm going to get possessed. Shut the door, shut the window.
Might already be.
Spray some salt around me, whatever. Yeah. So that was my experience. I don't know. Did you see it before that? I can't remember if I saw it before that.
I believe we watched The Exorcist and Rosemary's Baby after junior prom in high school.
Wow.
At my mom's house.
Great combo.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh my God. I don't know why. Like, we just wanted to watch. We hadn't, you know, it came out in like 73. It won the 74 Academy Awards. And that's when we were born, in 73, by the way. So,
a good year.
A good year for horror.
Us and The Exorcist.
But, my mom was like, why would you ever want to watch either of those movies? And I was like, I want to. Like, I was into it. And so were my friends. And she's like, can't you just guys watch the Princess Bride or Monty Python again? Like, what you usually watch? Because everybody hung out at my house. Like, it was just like that mom, you know, that recalls mom. And I'm like, no, we're going to go full on scary. And both movies scare the shit out of me.
I feel like those 70s movies scare me more than like the new ones, though. Because Rosemary's Baby is another one that I'm like, that's like, there's something.
Just there's something so classic about having no like CGI, having to pump the air conditioning.
They just have to be
to get
scary.
The clouds of breath and all that. You know, they had to really be creative. And
yeah, I feel like there is that kind of realism factor to this movie. Now, we'll talk about my experience with the film in a little bit, but I've got to get over to him. My co-host, I love you. Thank you for being here.
I may or may not love you. I may or may not love you. You don't have to thank me for being on my own show. I appreciate the thanks. But,
I'm really, really glad that you were able to make it for this one. I was sad you weren't able to make it for Nosferatu, but you're here. I know you are a huge, and I mean a huge fan of this film. So how old were you when you first experienced The Exorcist?
I was 14 years old. Jesus Christ. It was the same year that I saw Halloween for the first time. And I remember that year very perfectly. I went and stayed overnight at a person's house I didn't actually even know. I was supposed to be staying over the night at my friend Eric's house. And he was dating this girl named Christy, who he actually is married to right now. So that's true love may last, I hope, for people if you find it. She was hanging out at her friend's house, Erica, and we went over there and we're all just hanging out, young teen kids, and they're like, let's put on a movie. And they're like, you ever seen The Exorcist? And I was like, whoa, this is gonna be cool. And they threw it in VHS, of course. And nice. I watched this movie, and for some reason I ended up not staying the night, and my parents actually came to get me like really late. And then I remember sitting in my bed and staring at the wall. I could not fucking sleep. Like, and I was that kid that was like, nothing can touch me. And I remember it really did affect me in that way where I had nightmares for weeks after that. Like, it really emotionally affected me and it scared the shit out of me. So it's definitely, I think out of all the movies I watched when I was young, one of them affected me the most as far as scaring me to death. But Nick, I have to ask you, because I feel like I already knew this, but maybe I forgot it, but you have never actually seen The Exorcist before. This shouldn't surprise me, but for some reason, it kind of does a little bit.
It should never surprise you when it comes to me and this show that I haven't seen something. But yes, never seen it before until about 3 hours ago. 3 hours ago. So, an interesting experience, I'll say. There are certain things, and this is actually really kind of fascinating, because I just listened to a Patreon episode from Paul and Wayne, who were reviewing Casablanca, and they talked about this briefly. And they talked a little bit about viewing old films through a modern lens when you've never seen them before and you don't have that kind of context for viewing them, and wondering if you can watch them the same way and if it can affect you the same way. I don't necessarily know if I fully agree with them on their viewpoints on it, because I think Wayne kind of landed on, I like the film, but I can't view it through like an older lens. I have to view it through a more modern lens. I don't know if I'm butchering that. Sorry, Wayne. But for me, there are a lot of really, really good things about this movie. I don't want to say that I came out of this movie with a negative experience, but there are definitely some aspects of this movie where I kind of just cocked my head slowly to the side and I was like, really? Really? Like, this shit would never fly today. Never. 2018? Never in a million years. And Ellen Burstyn, who I treasure, I adore her, she was robbed of an Academy Award by Julia Roberts in Requiem for a Dream. She was incredible. And Aaron fucking Brockovich, fuck you, Julia Roberts. But in this film, like, really, I feel like Friedkin's only direction to her was more hysterical. Nope. More hysterical. And, like, I'm just like,
how would you feel if your kid was fucking possessed by a demon?
Floating above their bed, panting.
How would you feel if you saw that? This movie. I live tweeted this, if you want to ever go back and look at the tweets and stuff. And I was like, I find her interesting because she's a client and because she sleeps above her covers. 4 feet above her covers. So I really, really did have a good time with this. But yeah, there are some things that as the modern film viewer I am, I can't be okay with anymore. I can't be like, yeah, that's fine.
That's really unfortunate. And I feel like that's something that you've gone through over the past couple of years with some of the stuff we've done for our patrons or our fans, where they wanted you to watch older movies. Or, I mean, I could even recall when you watched The Princess Bride, where you appreciate it, but you can't see it through that same lens. What? Because
I appreciate it.
But it's frustrating for me, because I wish that, as a friend of yours, not just a co-host, I wish I could go back in time with you and have you watch it on VHS before there was The Conjuring, Insidious, this exorcism movie, that exorcism movie, and 50 other movies that have tried to rip this off, and see it that way, because you've seen a lot of movies already that have ripped off this movie, and it is very difficult. Like, for me watching it tonight, I've watched this movie 25 times in my lifetime, and I see what you're saying, but I still see it the way that I feel like I would see it if I was still there in 1973.
And I actually want to throw this over to you ladies at Two Girls on a Bench, but for me, when I was watching this film, I made a comment over on Twitter when I was live tweeting this super early in the film, because what Friedkin does here is he loves long takes. He loves to just let shots and scenes linger to just develop. You're relaxing and you're settling into this world, which I really respect and I really love about this film. And I wanted to get you guys to kind of chime off on that, and then you can kind of take it in your own direction. But is that kind of the experience you had with it, where the way Friedkin shoots this film, I feel, is it's very open the door, swing open the door, and just, you know, you sit down and you get comfortable in and with the film.
I feel like the exposition and the lead up to the actual exorcism, which they don't even really reference until after an hour or so into the movie.
Yeah, well into it, yeah.
So,
it's like an hour.
Yeah, it's so intense, and it builds the suspense and builds it and builds it and builds it. And I didn't remember, honestly, the terrifying medical procedures they did to her.
Yeah, no. that was so horrific.
That needle into her neck and the blood shooting out. Oh, that was an MRI or something. That
apparently they healed wounds, or they did medical procedures in the 70s by just making a lot of noise.
Yeah, I know, it's all boom, boom.
When it started making the noise, I was like, it must be like an MRI. Maybe they had to do it with contrast in her brain to see. But still,
but why was there blood spurting out of her neck?
Scary.
That scared me more than anything. I was like, God, I don't want to go back to the 70s. I love the
contrast of that, too. I mean, those medical procedures, you guys are exactly right. Those are horrific. And like, I'm watching them, I'm just like, nope, not on board with this. And then later on in the film, you're getting to see those scenes of the demon and Father Marin is trying to exorcise the demon. And like, it took me back to those for just a moment. And I was just like, yeah, Friedkin, I see what you're doing.
Yeah, right. And well, the other thing I think that's really smart, and this is probably why they, maybe I'm guessing, why they won the Academy Award for audio mixing and sound, as well as best adapted screenplay, because you'll be watching a scene and something normal, like it's very quiet, very, very quiet. And then it cuts to the next scene and a train screams by and it's like a jumpable sound. And then like it'll be very, very quiet, go to the next scene and she's screaming. And it's like the sound like made me, I was so on edge. Like I never knew, like, you know, like an airplane flying over or whatever. It was just like cut through that silence.
I think
and
what
it was
it's
like
constantly doing
rattling.
It's constantly kind of keeping you in the mindset that you're watching peaceful scenes. You're watching a mother and a daughter just playing or doing whatever. And then you'll hear something jarring that will just kind of amp up the tension or like make the hair stand up on the back of your neck just a little bit. And I want to pitch this down to you, Justin, really quick. But I said on Twitter when I was watching this, I said modern horror films, most of them, not all of them by far, but most modern horror films are directed by people that hated The Exorcist, because most modern horror films are not shot like this. They are shot very quick. Scenes are very punchy, very, very fast. Everything moves very quickly. The Exorcist is ploddingly slow, but effectively so.
Yeah, most definitely. And just to piggyback off what you guys were just saying about the way those loud sounds are coming in the sound editing, to me, that's an early representation of a 1970s jump scare. I mean, it made you jump back.
Yeah.
And my wife did not want to watch this movie. She likes like slashers and stuff, but anything with ghosts or supernatural, she's like, no. She knew I was watching this tonight. She knew I was doing this episode. And I'm like, just come out. I'm like, you'll be fine. It's fine. You'll be fine.
She's pointing at the part,
She was. But I mean, those scenes like you were referring to when the sound.
Yeah.
Like,
you jump.
It affected you. And those medical procedures, goddamn, seriously, I was shaking during that.
I know.
But no, for real. I mean, this film is very much a 1970s movie, but I love how drawn out it is. It just lets you envelop yourself in these characters and this world they're creating. And it's very real. It's so grounded. They ground this thing in the most realistic fashion possible. Mm-hmm. This does not feel like a lot of the movies now that try to do the same thing where it's so over the top. Like, this thing is just, it's a family. And one of my favorite things about this is the beginning. You see the relationship with Chris and Regan. She's such a sweet girl. Regan is such a sweet, normal girl. She's asking for like a horse. It's like that classic, can I have a pony, mommy, type thing. Like, and you see the relationship is so close. She's such a cute little girl, so well behaved and everything like that. So when shit starts hitting the fan later on, it makes it even more worse. And so, I mean, like, I know that if you made that movie now, it'd be like a little brat on her iPhone complaining that she wasn't going out on Friday night with her friends or something. It wouldn't be the same thing. I'm just being honest.
So no, like I feel like that was the most unbelievable part for me because I have a 12-year-old girl and she is not that sweet. So let me just say.
Hey, I got a 14-year-old one too, right back there.
So. I know. I'm like, this is signs of bad things to come when a mother and daughter are getting along this well. I was like, in something time. Really bad.
So she starts to get possessed,
happen.
And you were like, yeah, good.
Yeah, I'm like that. Well, I was like, that looks about normal. You know, I mean, that's really sort of what it's like. But I just want to throw out one thing, too. Like, I mean, well, actually, two things really quick is that Ellen Burstyn, when you were talking about Ellen Burstyn being kind of like hysterical, she does have an evolution where, and we were talking about this because it's so funny. It's one of the things I remembered about the movie is that she's always walking around with a cigarette, but she doesn't smoke it. So she's working on her lines at night, like by herself, like reading her script, and she's holding a cigarette. And then by the point that her daughter gets possessed, she's just fully smoking with the priest. You know what I mean? And you're like,
and the doctors.
And the doctors. Yeah, because the doctors all smoke in the hallway. So it's just such the 70s. Oh, but
the doctor smoking in the hallway. That's one of the funniest scenes of the whole movie if you watch it now. He
it's
lights
so
right
weird.
Up. Yep, your daughter.
It's so weird. Yeah. Yep. She
it's
totally needs a psychiatrist.
Low. It's right here.
Yep.
The
temporal I'm like, really? Is it just her brain? And oh, wait, actually, I wrote down what somebody said because it made me laugh. And they were like, the problem with your daughter is her brain, not her bed.
Because her bed was shaking.
Really? Does your bed shake?
I think
like
I wrote
that?
On Twitter something to the effect of, I miss the days when you could just be like, you know, demonic possession is just like, oh, they're just being a teenager.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, that's a great reflection of how things are now compared to how they were 20 years ago. 20 years ago, if a young child had anxiety or depression or mental issues, a lot of times they just go, oh, that's just them being a kid. And now they actually diagnose that stuff. So even further back in the 70s, I mean, but I think they did a really good job of them trying to find a scientific reason as to why these things were actually happening to Regan. But I bought the doctors. I think they're not like hammy over the top. And that during that time frame in a lot of other movies of the genre, you see doctors and they're like, hokey characters. And these guys were all very seriously and well done, I thought. But
even when they suggested that maybe she go see a priest, you know, at that point,
well,
you know,
like
they're leading
table,
up to it. Yeah.
Like a round table of doctors.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, yeah, I think she just needs an exorcism. Okay, let's
they don't actually.
It.
But
say
I think the way the scene's done is pretty deadpan, though. I think that's just me, though.
No,
they're very serious. Yeah,
it's very serious.
No, it's like a real suggestion. They're
She's
not joking around.
She reacts the most realistically to that too, because as a mother, you know, listening to doctors tell you that the only solution is to go see somebody who deals with witchcraft,
a witch doctor,
witch doctor or whatever. Yeah, it's like, okay, wait, what are you even talking
about? Well,
they're
not religious because she pulls out that cross from underneath
the
girl's pillow or whatever.
She's like mad about it.
And she's like walking around asking like her house staff, like, did you do this? Did you do this? So she's obviously just like not religious. She's not into that. But then she's just like, whatever, I'm going to smoke with the priest.
I want to branch off of that point, actually, in terms of talking about religion in the film, because when I was, and especially we can get into the actual possession that Regan undergoes here, but I, honest to God, I'm watching this movie and I'm like, these people could be wearing belt buckle hats And I wouldn't blink an eye. This film felt very like puritanical to me in its kind of belief, where it's like everything out of the demon's mouth is like literally like the, I think like almost the first time you hear the demon speak, the demon is like, fuck me, fuck me, fuck me. And like,
oh yeah,
everything about the demon is sex and violence and just cursing and everything. And like, I feel like, I like I said, it just gave me that kind of very puritanical kind of vibe, which I didn't necessarily find off-putting, but I just noted it because I was just like, man, they're really going for it here. Like, you know, like full on. They've tried the scientific approach. The scientific approach is not working. This is something completely different. And then it's just like, literally the only thing the demon does is be like, fuck me, fuck me, fuck me. And then they shoving the mom's face down into her crotch and stuff.
Dude, there's some stuff in this movie, man. I still can't believe they got away with at this
time. The cross.
The sticking the mom's face in the bloody private area. Just to say, I mean, because you don't actually see. I mean, that's what it is. Yeah. You know, so that to me even now is like beyond belief that they got away with
it. I saw an interview with Linda Blair, and she was saying that she was too young to understand what was going on in that scene.
That's correct.
So they had a body double that was like in her 20s that was this, like a small petite person that was the same size as Linda Blair. So a lot of times it was her. But she said they gave her a box with like a bloody sponge in it, and she had to stab it with the cross. She had no idea how they arranged it would make it look like what it did until she got probably to see it way older.
Well, and I think what's so interesting about that is in the 70s, that was probably the most shocking thing. In the 70s, I mean, this is like we said, the year we were born. Like, I can't even imagine people hadn't seen anything like this before. A little girl.
People were.
It's just like, what the hell is going on, right? That's crazy.
People said that they were fainting at the premieres, like in the audience. They were fainting.
Really?
People were leaving. Sure, people were getting sick. Like, it was so disturbing. And yeah.
I could definitely see that because nothing else like this had ever come out before it.
I almost feel like, and this is me putting myself in a period in history in which I did not live, but stay with me on this. But I almost feel like this film is a little bit, and I mean a little bit of a response to just the outright hedonism of the 60s, where you're coming in here and you're getting, you know, a demon who is trying to demonize all of these illicit behaviors and everything and kind of giving that spin on. I mean, again, this film was probably shot in like what, 1971, 1972. You're talking right after the end of the 60s. The counterculture movement was like full swing at this point. So I don't know, like historically, for whatever reason, my brain just went there. And I don't know if that's necessarily anything that Friedkin intended or anything. I don't know when was the novel written, Justin? Do you know?
In 1971, yes. And it was based on a real exorcism.
From the 1949.
So the novel wasn't very far removed from that whole thing either. So, like, I don't know if, like I said, I don't know if anybody else necessarily got that. But I teased those elements out of it because I really, you know, you're like, you think about the 60s and that's all you think about is counterculture, free
love. You even see a scene in it with when Chris is shooting the movie in the beginning.
Yeah,
she's in a scene. She's an actress in a scene where there's a bunch of people protesting, and she goes up and she grabs the air horn, and you know, like that. To me, if that's not on the nose, I don't know what is, man.
Yeah,
it's right there in plain sight.
So I just, like I said, that was me. Maybe teasing that out of there, but yeah.
Did you read the book, Justin?
I have never read the book, but I did meet William Peter Blatty before he died, so I'm very fortunate for that.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I live in D.C., and the Exorcist steps are in Georgetown, and I go there.
Oh, my gosh.
So we go there.
I went there.
I love it there. So we go there all the time to, like, do boating and, like, go eat.
That's stuff. The stairs you're always talking about.
Well, yeah, the stairs I've always taken pictures in front of.
You've taken so many pictures there, and now I'm picturing them in my head.
Well, yeah, and the house is right around the corner. But they did an event. They actually commemorated the steps with William Friedkin and William Peter Blatty, and did like a signing, and they put a plaque up, and it was really, really cool. It was before Blatty died. So, but I've never read the book. I've always been interested. From what I've read and from what I've heard from a lot of my peers and friends that have read the book, they say that the director's cut, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit here, is pretty much like a lot of it is what his book is. It's and even the theatrical cut is very faithful. The whole reason why the director's cut came out is because Blatty was unhappy with the theatrical cut. And he was pissed that some one of the head producers at Warner Brothers gave some notes to Friedkin, and Friedkin actually took those notes to heart and made the changes, the edits to the movie. And he thought it worked better. And then Blatty was pissed at him for like fucking 30 years about it. So, but there's that. Yeah, but I'd love to read the book. Have you guys read the book at all?
No, I want to. I actually...
I'm not reading that book.
Yeah, no, you can't. I want to read the book.
Because I read before I go to bed. Worst idea
ever.
Oh, yeah,
I would not read this kind of shit before I went to bed.
I only watched half the movie one night and then went to bed and dreamt about it the whole night. And then I was like, you know what? This is just like, oh my God.
She texted me at one point. She's like, I can't do it. It's too fucking scary. I can't do it.
And then for some reason, I decided to do it.
And then I was like, why don't you just like, you know, look up some lore. Like people died on the set. Like 9 people died or whatever. Like come with like fun facts. And she's like, okay, I watched it. Like,
no, I'm glad I watched it because I forgot what a well-made film it is. Yeah. I think all I was remembering was like the spinning head,
the
things that are pop culture references, but I forgot it's such a good film. And we were talking about this earlier, Tricia and I were talking about this earlier, that there's like, it wasn't a cheesy horror film. Like that wasn't the intention.
It's not at all.
You know what I mean?
I don't think
they even thought of it as
real
horror
movie with real actors and real cinematography. Like it wasn't, and it's just, I feel like I grew up, you know, later, even though we were born the year this was made, but like late thinking like horror movies were silly. You know what I mean? Like they were like, oh, they were supposed to scare you and you watched them with friends. And like, I didn't really. And when you watch this, you're like, this is a real legit movie with big actors and,
well, it's weird because
I'm glad that I watched it again.
Friedkin actually, when you ask him in interviews, he'll flat out tell you. And when I saw him at the commemoration thing, he said, this is not a horror movie. So he doesn't consider it a horror film, even though it most definitely is a horror film. But I understand what he means when he says it's not a horror film, because, it's a movie about family. And above all, the theme of the film is faith and how much you have.
When I watched the film for the first time, for me, like, I'm watching it, and I kind of understand where he's coming from when he says this isn't a horror film, even though it does use a lot, and I mean a lot, of horror elements. But horror films are not fucking made like this nowadays. Horror films weren't even made like this, like, going into the 80s and shit. Horror films were much darker. Like, there's so many scenes in this that are really well lit during the daytime.
That's almost scarier. Like,
I want to talk about the makeup too, because the makeup is insanely good.
It's awesome.
I kind of understand where he's coming from that perspective. I think I would definitely agree with Justin. I would definitely say that this is a horror movie, but I can get him, because horror films, this was a lot different from most of the horror films I've ever seen, because it's approached so seriously. And again, when you watch this film, so many scenes, you just watch them unfold. You just watch all these different things, and the scenes just extend, and the scenes just keep going. And I really, really respect Friedkin for that, because a lot of people don't do this, because like I said, in modern horror, it's too punchy. You don't get the chance to involve yourself.
Yeah.
You get this kind of movie, you get the family scene, it'll be 3 minutes at the opening of the movie. You'll get a quick scene showing their chemistry together, boom, done, now we're on to the horror.
And you get the scare. You'll get the scare immediately. Right, and then the rest of the movie is just
the scare is a cold open, and then you'll get the family, and then you'll go back to the scare. It's not done like this anymore. And I feel like it makes me a little sad, because I think this is better.
I was just going to say, isn't this the only movie that's considered horror genre to receive an Academy Award at all?
This is one of the only films that were nominated for Best Picture considered
nominated for Best Picture. It did win awards.
And The Silence of the Lambs, I mean, I don't consider it straight horror. I consider it more thriller, even though there are strong horror elements. Yeah. That was also nominated for Best Picture. And Jaws was nominated for Best Picture as well, even though I don't consider it horror. A lot of other people do.
Jawsy,
other movies
Jawsy is not a horror creature, all right?
I don't so either.
Yeah. No, I don't. I mean, there are the first half of the movie is horror.
Jawsy is fun movie is adventure, and lovable,
but it's an adventure movie. We won't talk about that movie because we already talked about it a few months ago.
Jawsy a big old hug.
You want to bring Jawsy up again? We're talking about the fucking Exorcist. Even though both movies did take place in the 70s and not that far apart, like 2 years. So. It is what it is. But no, you're right, though. And it's amazing that the movie was nominated and it won. But it's great to see. I think that one of the most special things about this movie, even though I haven't read the book, is the book, because it's where all the ideas came from and where Blatty got all of his ideas on real occurrences, real happenings. And that they got somebody, after so many directors turned this down, Kubrick was offered this. He turned it down. A number of other directors turned it down. And then Friedkin, who had just won the Academy Award from The French Connection, then he went on, I'm going to fucking do this. And he was a young director. And I think he really took the bulls by the horn with this thing and said, how do I execute this the best way possible? And I think in my head how this could have went with any other director of the time, because a lot of 70s directors, it was when the studio system was changing. It was when big corporations were starting to buy all the studios, and they were basically just corporate entities. It was no longer like that 50s, 60s, you know, golden age where people actually cared about making movies. In this case, they actually, Warner Brothers let this thing happen. They let this thing happen exactly as it was supposed to happen, and they had balls.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, well, I have like two random notes that are not connected, but the part that I always say is the scariest part of this movie is when,
she pees.
Reagan comes out into the party with her mom, you know, her mom and her friends, and like playing the piano and like doing their thing. And she just stands there and she says to the priest, right? It's the priest. Yeah. She says, "You're going to die." And then she just pees.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you're like, what the hell is going on? That is like the scary. I mean, I know there's like so many scary things that happen after that.
No, but it's like the most subtle scare.
It's
like
so weird because she's such a nice, sweet little girl. And all of a sudden, she's like,
it's one of those first moments where things start to become really unsettling. Like you really start to get those kind of like, wait a minute. And then you do a double take during a kind of scene like that where you're just kind of like, wait a minute. What
did that
and then the mom's like, oh, it's just nerves, you know, she's been sick. And I'm like, I'm sorry, nobody that's been sick comes down and says you're gonna die and pees on the floor. Like, that's just like the scariest thing. I wrote down devil bed shaking. I was like, the bed
when
shaking.
She comes into her mom's room and she's like, I can't sleep, my bed is shaking. And the mom's like, all right. I'm like, if my kid came in my room and was like, mommy, I can't sleep, the bed's shaking, I'd be like, let's go check that bed out. Like, what's going on?
I'd be like, let's move.
Yeah.
Get your stuff. Let's go.
You know, one of my favorite parts of this movie was Chris opens the door and the bed is going apeshit. The bed is going crazy. Regan's on the bed saying, mommy, help me. Mommy, help me. So instead of trying to pull her daughter off the bed, she jumps. On the bed.
Yeah.
And then just stays there. And then that's where the scene ends and it goes to the next scene. But I loved that scene because I'm just like, again, head turned sideways a little bit. You're like, really?
It's such an innocent time.
Is legit like this.
No, but like, I mean, if my cat's bed was shaking like that and I didn't know what to do, I'd probably jump on top of her and try and pull her off. You know what I mean? Like,
I try and get them off of it, though, I think.
I don't know what you're going to do. Like,
trying to think of why that's happening. When you see a bed moving, I think the natural thing to do if you're heavier, you're bigger than your child, would be to jump on it to see if it stops. Maybe she's just rumbling it around.
At my expense, I'm going to come down there and I'm going to.
I've never once on this entire show in 3 years ever done a fat joke towards you. You better shut whatever up. You're gonna get whooped.
I'm just
by
saying
daddy
that demon
tonight.
Would have been strong as hell if I would have jumped on that bed and it still would have kept moving. Then whoo, run, move out of town.
That is the devil right there, possession. Also, side note: in the beginning, when they're like, "Oh, what's this Ouija board?" I was like, put the goddamn Ouija board down.
I said that too. I was like, why is there a fucking Ouija board in this film?
And also, she's like, oh, and it was like Mr. Rogers. It was like,
I'll tell you why there wasn't a Ouija board in this movie. I'll tell you why.
Because that's how she got possessed. No? What? Yeah.
I'm assuming she played with it alone. Don't open that portal.
What was
There's another
name?
Reason why.
Dr. Because Happy or Captain Howdy or
Captain
something?
Howdy.
Captain
yes.
Jack. Oh, I thought it was Captain Jack.
No.
It's Captain Howdy, which that. Actually ends Captain up being Howdy. A character in a movie called Strangeland starring Dee Snider of Twisted Sister in the 90s. Just a weird fact.
Jesus.
Which is a very right. good movie that I enjoy. Yeah. It's actually
Kill
not a good movie, but I enjoy
hit
it.
Hit him.
But there is a reason for that is when William Peter Blatty was writing the movie, the cabin that he was renting to write the novel, there was an Ouija board there. So when it was already there. So I think that he just saw it there and he put it into the movie and his novel.
Nice. Nice.
I just learned from the Paranormal Chicks, another podcast, that you're not, when you have a Ouija board, you can't like burn it. They did like a history of Ouija boards. You can't burn it or like destroy it. You have to like give it another home. Because I think one. If you try and destroy it, do you have one?
I have one.
I'm never coming to your house again.
What you
Our
what you can do with
a
Ouija
over.
Board is you can very carefully open the top, pull down your pants, squat over it, take a wet shit into it, and then close it, and then throw it into a fire, because Ouija boards are fucking bullshit.
Guess what's going to happen then, Ouija Nick? Boards. You're going go to bed, you're gonna go to bed, then a demon or a ghost yeah, or some kind sure. of spook is going to come and suffocate
shaking,
you with your own shit to death.
Shaking bed.
I'd be fine with it.
Bed.
I'd be fine with it. I really, really would be.
It's like magic fingers.
I want to talk about this before.
Demonic.
We've got
magic
so much
fingers.
More stuff, I feel like, to talk about this movie. Sorry. But we've talked about it a number of times. We've mentioned it, and I have never seen it, so I'm going to stay out of this conversation. But there's an extended cut for The Exorcist. I've never seen it, but I want to know what the difference is, because Justin, I was texting Justin a little bit after I had watched the movie about it, and apparently it's really, really different.
It's a little bit longer. I feel like as fans of film, there are more scenes that develop the characters. It's a lot more dialogue stuff. There's not like a lot of added scary stuff, except for one of the things people complain about the most, and I think that you would probably really hate this, Nick, is that William Friedkin went in later and he digitally added in the demon's face. By the way, the demon's name in this is Pazuzu. And you see like in random shots that don't even make sense, like Chris will be in like the kitchen and you'll see the demon's face reflecting on like the cupboards and stuff.
I thought that was
it's in a dream. It's
wait
in
a minute,
the priest's
that happened
dream,
in the version
isn't
that I
it?
Watched. Did I watch the director's cut?
I think wait a minute. Did you see the spider walk?
Yeah.
No. Oh, you watched the director's
cut. You saw the spider
cut.
Walk?
Yeah.
Down the
Then
stairs.
You saw the director's cut.
Was that the
then you saw the director's cut. Yeah, you saw the director's cut.
I thought that was really, really...
I fucking asked you what version you were going to watch before
it didn't say. It didn't say director's cut on it. I'm sorry. But anyway, like...
So you already know.
You
I don't have to
up.
Tell you.
I'm glad you brought that up because I did hate that shit because all of a sudden the demon's head appears on the fucking... the fan for the fucking stove. And I'm like, is the fan possessed? If you put fucking... if you cook macaroni and cheese and the steam billows into it, is it going to burn the demon? Like that shit to me.
Okay, so that's something that Friedkin went in way later, and he added way after the fact. So that's not like some of the other stuff that I'll
now
mention.
Now I'm kind of pissed. Now I want to go watch the actual like theatrical cut of this movie.
Here's the thing, though. I'm the minority, I think, with my generation. I love the spider walk. I think it's amazing.
We love it too.
It's an image
that
I think is
good. Yeah. It's so scary. It's like that peeing thing. It's like this weird.
It's just so creepy.
It's just so awkward.
Seeing a physical person doing that. It's not a prop. It's not a special.
No,
it's
actual,
her on wires.
It's her.
Yeah.
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 No, my daughter can do that once again. Scary 12-year-olds. Okay. Just putting
can
it out
she do
there.
It down the stairs, though?
I don't know. If she can, I'm going to film it and like let you know. But she
well,
can,
the reason why
that
they
can
cut
do
that
back
scene
bends
out is,
and then walk. And I was like, that looks like The Exorcist. And it freaked me out. Yeah.
The reason why they cut that out for obvious reasons is back then they didn't have a proper way of erasing the wires because they had to put, for safety reasons, obviously, they couldn't erase the wires to make it look right. So Friedkin just killed it and removed it. So, I mean, but for me, that scene is like one of the most iconic scenes.
There you go.
Even
I
though
watched the director's cut.
Okay, so I don't need to talk. So you know. So the version that's the theatrical version, Nick, is just the same movie you watch, just with less stuff.
But
in
just
it.
Without Does that really make sense? Stupid fucking demon heads like haunting the overhead range.
I feel like the demon heads is one of the biggest problems I have with Friedkin did. A lot of
every time I saw that shit, I'm not gonna lie. Every time I saw it, I was just like, what the fuck?
It's kind of cheesy. It's only in the... I watched the original one this time. It's in a scene where the priest is dreaming about, like, his mom.
Yes. Yeah.
And then randomly, there's a flash of the, like, black and white demon face, and you're like, that's weird. That, yep. And then you never... I don't think you ever see it again in the rest of the movie, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
Unless you watch
the director's cut. You see the face pop up again later on when they're doing the exorcism. But that's it. It's very brief. It's not... You don't see the face on the fucking wall.
The oven fan is not haunted, right?
Like, no.
Because I'm concerned. Whoever moves into this house, they're going to try to boil some fucking pasta, and they're going to burn the demon, and it's going to possess somebody else. Is that the plot of one of the Exorcist sequels? Tell me it is.
There's one scene, though.
Get that Ouija board out of there.
There's one scene in the director's cut that I like that you probably didn't even notice, Nick, because you didn't watch the theatrical. I've never seen the original. But it was when Father Marin and Father Karras are talking on the stairs in between the exorcism sessions. I just think it's a really good little character moment for them because you could see how exhausted they are.
Yeah. And,
you know, obviously we see that they're both going through something really difficult in their life. Obviously Father Marin's going through the possibility of death. He's obviously dealing with an ailment and Father Karras is dealing with his own absence of faith. He's battling his own faith throughout the film because of the loss of his mother. So they're both going through very different situations, but very strong situations in their own lives. And they're both trying to overcome a fucking demon that's overtaken this young, beautiful girl. It's no one of my favorite moments of the movie in the director's cut because it just lets you breathe for a moment, let the horror to the side, and just let these characters be true humans.
That's a pretty intense scene that leads up to it. Of course, I was on Twitter making fun of it the whole time because this film is one of those things that's entered pop culture. I mean, it's definitely pop cultural relevant. So all I could think of during the entire exorcism scene was the scene from The Boondocks when Uncle Ruckus is trying to exorcise Stink Meaner from Tom. And all I was doing was laughing, like, literally the entire time. And I just... If you've never seen it, watch it, because it's fucking hilarious, but...
I love The Boondocks.
I adored it. It's not to say that this wasn't really, really good, but it's one of those things where when it's in pop culture and you've seen so many references to it, then eventually when you finally see the thing, you're like, oh, that's where that was from.
Nick, I can't help it that you spend all your time watching children's animation. That you spend all your time watching cartoons made for young impressionable children instead of watching movies like William Friedkin's classic, The Exorcist. I can't help that.
Man.
You filled your mind with pop culture crap.
I can't believe that I actually watched a director's cut. Okay, so we learned something. Like I said,
I should have asked, is there a scene where a girl walks like a spider down the stairs? But you didn't know.
I was disagreeing with someone on Twitter too, because I was like, oh, I'm watching the original cut and it's in there. And they were like, no, I don't think it is. And I'm
so
like,
you made me watch the original cut tonight when I could have rewatched my personally. What do you girls think? Do you prefer the original cut or do you prefer the director's cut? That's the question I want to know.
I feel like now that I've seen them both, I'm like mixing them together. I mean, I remember the spider walk. I don't remember the scene with the priest that you're talking about. So I'm kind of like,
I do, because I don't remember. When I was watching the original, I was like, why are they just going like pushing straight through this exorcism? Like they never show them going. And I remember that scene because you would be exhausted and it seemed very almost like rushed the way it was cut together on when they're actually doing the exorcism. So I did remember that. I think I preferred the director's cut except for the cheesy demon in the stove. So
yeah, there's also, I think, one of the most jarring things about the director's cut. I love the opening of the theatrical cut. It's great. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's Iraq. It's beautiful scenery. Yeah. You know, and you're there and you see Father Marin there and he's out there for a dig. And it's just it puts you into a different world, which is a great contrast to the rest of the movie.
That
really
takes, good, too.
It is.
It's so creepy and bright, like really bright.
Bright.
Yeah. But in the director's cut, the opening shot, you see it goes back and forth between that and then the McNeil house, which why would you see the house in the opening scene? It doesn't make any sense to me why you would see the house in the beginning shot. I mean, they do cut to the family not that long after that, but I like seeing what he's doing there in Iraq first with the dig.
Yeah.
Because one of the most iconic scenes in the whole movie is when he decides that he's going to leave the dig. He's leaving. He's done with the project. And he walks up to the demon statue that's standing there with his giant demon, you know, schlong hanging.
And did you guys notice
I sucked
the
dick last night?
That never happened. It never happened.
A demon.
Did you notice the orange bird that Regan made in the beginning? The craft in the basement that she made is shaped just like the demon. It has like wings going out and it has a nose that's sort of phallic and it has like stripes on it.
I did not even connect that.
Because I was like, oh my God.
She's very crafty.
I remember that too because it was still wet, so her mom wanted to put it away so it would dry. I remember that scene, though.
But it's shaped just like the silhouette of the demon. Like, and this is after, you know,
she's like, this is great. Let's play with the Ouija board.
Yeah. No big deal. Oh, the Ouija board moved by itself.
Oh, that wasn't weird.
Not at all.
Yeah, no. Hmm. I wanted to say something, too, about the priest that you brought up. It's like, you know, I almost feel like the priest deserves his own movie in a weird way because he's so tortured the whole time. The whole thing where he goes to that psychiatric hospital to see his mom is like the most depressing, sad thing I think I've ever seen where they're showing all the ladies. Yeah, they're showing all the ladies that are there. And there's like all these long shots of them just like being like really messed up. And you're like, what is happening here? And then it's like, oh, his mom died. And you're just like, and that whole scene with him and his mom and her wrapping up his, like him wrapping up her leg and like taking care of her and like all of that. There was like a whole other, that was like a weird story. Short story by itself, you know, like, where I was like, wow, this is an interesting, like what the fuck's
like
happening
longing
here?
For his life of a boxer.
That's one of those things where
I feel like
you wouldn't get that in modern horror. You wouldn't get that. You would get
that backstory. Like, you would just see a priest.
A like, quick shot. No,
anything else.
Maybe. You would get that really quick shot of him sitting in his mother's bedside and she would die and it would quickly cut away to something else.
Yeah.
You wouldn't get that lingering shot. You really get to know Karis, especially in kind of a psychological standpoint. He's a psychologist and he's a priest, so it kind of makes sense. But I really, really enjoyed that you kind of get to get a little bit deeper into his character like that. I really,
I feel like
he's
the most deep character in the film.
Yeah.
He's also the most interesting character in the film.
He's like the lead. He's almost the lead.
He really is. And but. Like, there's like so much depth to him and he's so tortured and he's like running.
He's relatable.
Like, he's like, you know, trying to make, like, get the shit out of his head. And then even when she comes to him, he's like, we're going to have to go back to the dark ages if you want to do an exorcism. Like, even he doesn't believe that, you know?
Exactly,
and it's just amazing that he comes around to it, you know? But
well, he's battling his faith. But his character arc is the strongest in the film because we see him battling it through the whole film, at the end, he finally comes to grips with it as he's beating. He's beating this little girl's body with this demon.
Yeah.
Take me. And then what he does after he takes the demon, he sacrifices himself within his own faith to take this from this little girl. And that's one of the most powerful scenes of the entire
movie. Let me tell you, the ending of this movie, when, you know, you get to that place where you find out that Father Marin has died and whatever, and legit, he just throws down and just starts beating the shit out of a little girl. I'm not even kidding. I was like, this is the
gloves
best
off, man.
Fucking
and
thing
this
I've
dude's
ever
a boxer
seen.
Too. He's a boxer too. So you know this guy can place
punches
too.
Definitely the 70s.
Not really, the beating up a little girl part of it, but I like legit like that demon for a half an hour straight of fucking screen time is like, fuck you, suck his cock, you're a fucking cocksucker. Like literally that fucking demon
sucks cock in hell.
Yeah, that demon's just such a fucking asshole. Like when he just starts throwing down and beating the shit out of it, you're just like, yeah, like finally, like the holy water and shit's not fucking working. Beat that motherfucker. And then the sacrifice is incredible. Like I absolutely loved that aspect of it, and it all happens kind of really, really quickly. Even when you're watching the film, like I'm watching it
does.
And all of a sudden like he throws himself out the window. I was just like, wait a minute, what? Like all of a sudden the whole thing just happened. I was just like, it's over that quickly, but it's really impactful, especially for Karis. Like I love the scenes where the demon is imitating his mother's voice and everything like
so
that
awful.
And constantly trying to guilt him and everything like that. It like especially the exorcism scene, like the final probably half an hour of this movie is impeccable. Just impeccable.
Well, you know that they created an animatronic dummy of Linda Blair to be Regan, for the spinning head, but also for, there's a couple other moments where they use it, but it's like, I saw a making of it, and it's like a full-on robotic, eyes move, mouth moves, like a Disney Pirates of the Caribbean, like, animatronic
you
robot.
You
want to
see that shot of the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. You're pulling through the ride, like, all of a sudden, halfway through,
and there's Regan, just, like, spinning her head around, like, yeah. No, but I was impressed that the technology, like, the invention of it. And even the soup, he invented, a straw system like that would go into her mouth that would be concealed by the makeup to make the projectile vomit, and it's like, it's so, I don't know, there's something about the so hands-on creative work that went into that. Like, it took so much longer than it would take to achieve those effects now.
And even the makeup work.
Paved the way.
We got to talk about the makeup work. Yeah. It's Dick Smith. It's iconic. One of the most iconic makeup artists in the world. And he finally won an Academy Award, an honorary, later on in 2012. But he also won for Amadeus in 1985.
Oh, the makeup
is not credited on this movie, but was his assistant on this movie, none other than Rick Baker, who went on to do American Werewolf in London and win an Amazing Oscar and be a number of Academy Award winners.
And then, like, Thriller, right?
Yeah.
Didn't the guy
Thriller,
that did American
Werewolf, which I'm wearing
the Thriller
shirt right now. So, I mean, I love Rick Baker so much. So he was actually, that was one of his first gigs, was working with Dick Smith on The Exorcist.
And he wasn't credited.
He was not credited. Well, he was just his assistant at the time. He was very, very young, but he did work on it. And but Dick Smith's makeup work is literally iconic. It's still, in my opinion,
it's
one of the best makeup effects jobs ever. Because they go out of their way to give you a lot of close-ups with Regan before she goes into the transformation. And the transformation itself is, we see it. It is just that, a transformation.
Yeah.
She goes through this. She gets worse and worse and worse, and the scrapes and the scars, and she gets paler, and the contacts change and depending on the scene. And I just love it. They did a brilliant job.
Yeah, it's
brilliant
phenomenal.
Job.
Utterly, utterly incredible. That's probably like the biggest thing that I take away from this film, outside of everything else, like its place in history and whatever else, is the makeup work. I think that the makeup work is utterly phenomenal, and I think hats off especially to Linda Blair, because
we gotta talk about her
for a young girl to pull off a performance like this, wherein she completely sells that she's this demon and everything, and like the eyes
that?
And like the makeup, like some of that makeup, I mean, it could not have been that comfortable with all that makeup and stuff like that on, but
put on
It's an incredible performance. Absolutely incredible performance. Easily the most affecting performance in the film.
The contrast between the sweet little girl and that is so shocking. You're just like, how the range of an actress to be able to do that is big, because like being like scary and doing whatever, that's one thing, but just being very genuine, like, we really bought that she was a sweet girl, so for sure.
Well, she got hurt, I think, when the bed was rocking, that one scene where she's going up and down. I saw another, it was like watching old interviews, and she was like, I'm screaming, the lines are like, help me mommy, help me, help me, like, it hurts, and like, it hurt, but like, nobody knew she was actually hurt, because
she's like,
that's
no, really,
what the lines were.
It actually hurts.
Yeah.
Stop.
She didn't break character and be like, fuck this, get me off this bed, freaking.
No, and she's 12 years old. I mean,
that would have been in character. They would have been like,
well,
she's like,
true.
Fuck this.
She'll fuck
like,
this, mom.
Whoa,
no, but your daughter wouldn't, I mean, if anything, like, just to have that makeup on your face at 12 years old, like, just to handle the stress and the pressure. Franken would like shoot a gun before scenes to startle the actors to get a really big reaction out of
what?
Them.
Which now if you did that, that'd be called abuse, and there'd be a whole picket line out in front of the studio. You'd
oh my
be fired.
God! Yeah.
You'd be going to prison for abuse, and which, no offense, I'm not a softie. I'm not against taking people out for if they do bad things, but fuck off. Let directors do their job. If that's what they're going to do to get an emotion out of you.
The same thing for the infamous vomit scene too, because Jason Miller did not know that was going to happen.
He didn't know.
Oh,
no,
really?
He just got
specifically
hit in the
did
face not want him to
know.
Well, pea soup it is, but his reaction,
though.
Like that shock, like that look on his face is real.
And that's the take they put in the movie was his first initial
and
like
Yeah, and that's so good the way that they had it set up. He didn't even know the apparatus was in, like, set up in Lena Blair. You know what I mean? Like, in her mouth to shoot the piece of paper.
I agree with Justin.
I love the scene after
that.
When I love the scene after that. It's so, because I think this is what's cool about it, is that it's so what would happen in real life. It's like, oh, my scary possessed daughter just spit a bunch of green shit on you. And she's like, let me wash her shirt and, like, iron it. Like,
and iron your sweater.
Though, like, what you would do. You'd be like, I'm so sorry. Like, it's like, you know, I'm so sorry my kid puked on you. Let me like, you know, wash her shirt. And then he's just like, huh, did you tell her that my mom died? And we're like, dun, dun, dun.
She's well, she also gives him a drink, too. So she gives him a drink, too.
A scotch, yeah.
But no, I got to ask you guys, though, because this for me, you know, and I'm watching it on the Blu-ray on my HD setup, and it looks great. Like, but dude, still, doesn't that green pea soup look fucking disgusting? Doesn't that?
Yeah,
it's
so
oozing
gross
out of her mouth the whole time. It's
and
so,
then it's, like,
it's
on
still
her
so
chest,
disgusting. All
and
over
it's still,
still
there.
Yeah,
like
and all crusty at her mouth
it's
later
all,
on. Yeah, it's all over gross her face.
Like, on the outfit, the way her mouth dress gets all dry, and you can still see, like, crust of it in her lips.
She was just
it's so gross.
Super gross. The smell must be horrible when you walk in that room.
I know. Pea soup does not smell good.
Extremely
effective.
Okay. That's not what I meant, but I guess pea soup smells bad. Or a demon-infested girl puking on herself and sitting there with it for a few days also smells, but
also,
anyway.
Yeah. Also, that is what I meant.
My God.
Oh,
anyways.
My Lord. I think I could speak for everybody on the panel here when I say that, you know, the director's cut, apparently, for the first time. Justin, who first watched it when he was 14. You ladies who first watched it in the theater when it was re-released. I think that sounds like 25th anniversary when we were talking about it. But I think we can all probably agree.
So we were 25.
Just right? An incredible film. I think it's an incredible film, especially for the time it was released, especially for the genre that, even though Friedkin doesn't agree, it's a part of. I think it's a lot different from most of the other horror films I've ever seen, because most horror films are not even remotely concerned with this kind of character involvement, this kind of character development, and this kind of setup, this kind of long game to get to, like, oh, by the way, there's a demon possession in this movie and we're going to, you know, have to excise some pee, soup, puke and shit. I really, really enjoyed it. I really, really had a good time watching this movie for the first time. So I'm really, really glad that I said I had never seen it, and Justin leapt at it. He was like, you're watching it. Like, no matter what, as soon as I said I hadn't watched it, he was like, done. This is what
it's
you're
in
watching.
The National Film Registry.
Yeah,
that
I'm
means
glad
something. So that means it's something you have to see. Everyone, I feel like.
No, I agree. Everybody, if I would have known you hadn't seen it, I would have pushed it even more, because I was kind of nonchalant, like, whatever movie you want to do. Oh, it's just whatever. But if you had said, I've never seen it, you said it to me today. And I was like, is he joking? Is he? He's fucking
now, would
with
you
me.
Guys, would you guys have come on if we said we were going to do The Exorcist 2, The Heretic?
I've never seen that. I only knew about it because when I was searching for The Exorcist to, like, rent it or whatever.
Me too.
I saw
not
2
gonna
and
lie.
3.
Exorcist
Are they good?
Exorcist 3? I think Exorcist 3 is good. It's totally different. It's totally William Peter Blatty actually directs. No, she's not in 3. William Peter Blatty actually directs 3. 2. Yeah. Linda Blair's in 2, and 2 is known for being one of the worst movies ever fucking made.
I want to watch it.
But you know what? They're coming out with a new restoration, a 4K restoration of it that's going to be hitting on Blu-ray
good
in the next month or two.
So that
just goes to show people
it.
Want it.
And his
no,
name,
it's, lots of people. That means lots Justin. Of people want a really bad movie, Nick. So
it's sort of like watching
They can go to theaters
Omen.
And watch Venom. They don't need to watch The Exorcist.
I mean, if we could come back ever someday, maybe next year, and talk about The Omen. That's like, I was like, why can't we just do The
Speaking
Omen?
Of Damien.
Speaking of
I've
possessed
also
children.
Never seen The Omen.
I very much, very
You've
much enjoy The
Omen.
Oh my God. Oh, that's going to be great.
I haven't seen
next
it.
Next year.
You have
this time
to.
Next year.
Nick also Omen. Hasn't seen the Amityville Horror either.
Nope.
So.
What?
Oh, I haven't seen that because I'm scared of it.
Well, have you seen
eventually,
the Omen?
Listen, eventually the shocked reactions have to stop because you'll wear your face out from making them. You can't just keep doing them.
I'm getting
you're like, just get rid of
already.
Your shocked reaction.
Yeah.
We're done.
Yeah, so many, especially classic horror films that I have. absolutely, absolutely never seen. But slowly, because of the podcast, Justin is able to slowly
educate you,
ease me into them. And we get to do amazing collaborations like this, which is great. All the horror, which has been amazing. Legit talking to everybody. Everybody's so excited to get their episodes out, to get their collaborations done. Hey, record this little piece for me here. Hey, do this little thing for me there. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
So fun.
I don't have anything else to say about the film. I think we've all kind of landed on that. We love this film kind of thing.
Yes.
Even though some of us maybe
great affection.
Never watching it again.
Super scared. I probably can't watch it again. I probably will, though. I was telling my son about it, and he's 13. He's at that age where probably, like, when you said you first saw it, where he's like,
he would love this movie.
But he's like me. He's super scared of, like, demon possession.
Oh.
And then he's like, I want to know about it. And then he started watching, like, YouTube videos about actual exorcisms. I was like, don't watch that. Don't watch the real shit. That's even worse, right? Wow. And then he was like, never mind, I can't watch it. And that night he was kind of like, didn't want to go to bed. And I was like, all right, dude, I told you. And then the next night I was watching The Exorcist and he goes, what are you watching? I'm like, I'm watching that movie. And he's like, never mind. He ran out of the room and went.
Well, it's funny
Fortnite.
You say that because my 14-year-old daughter came out and usually she'll come out and watch stuff with me, depending on what it is. She doesn't like horror, but she is in like a film class at school now. She just started high school this year. There are a couple of horror movies on there, but I mentioned I was watching The Exorcist and she just looked at me and then she looked at like the title screen on the Blu-ray of Regan with the demon fate. And she's like, she just shook her head and walked away. No. So, yeah, I get it, though. I get it. I mean,
still scares young people, right? That's a good movie.
It scared my wife. My wife is in her 30s. Yes.
I've never seen it. Scary. I'm like, man, this movie's fucking freaky.
But I'm still going to go back to what you girls said earlier. And the scariest thing is, make no mistake, the fucking medical procedures. God damn.
The medical procedures.
I was shaking. Yeah. I'm like, oh.
Especially if you have kids and you're like, ever had to go through anything medical at all. You're just like, can you imagine watching your child get that needle in their neck?
Well, you see the look on Chris's face and she's like in the horror on her face.
That's like the worst horrible thing that could happen.
Also, horror, science.
You're like, can you do this without like putting a needle in her neck and blood spurting? I was just like, what are they doing? It's like putting a fucking leech on her neck. I was like, what are they doing?
Unsanitary.
Yeah. Everyone's getting blood. You're like, this would never happen now. What the hell?
Anyway, oh my lord, ladies.
Shit.
It has been an absolute treat to have you join us here on the Epic Film Guys podcast. Because by this time next year, you guys are going to be like eating caviar out of, you know, Ryan. Ryan Gosling's going to be serving
like
you caviar.
Be popcorn bowl. Yeah.
Popcorn.
We'll be eating caviar on top of our popcorn.
We'll be eating gourmet popcorn.
Award winners for best podcast.
They won a major award.
2018.
It was.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
The lamp, with the leg.
I'm floored. I'm really, really floored. So thankful that you guys were able to win because you guys are awesome. You guys are absolutely amazing.
Thank you.
Don't forget about, Justin's going to be watching horror movies with, whomever he's watching them with.
I'm telling you, we meet this time next year, The Omen.
Omen.
Is going down.
I'm down. I'm always down to revisit that movie.
Yes.
Are you down to watch a horror movie? Really?
Such a good movie.
You?
Maybe.
And we can compare the old one to the new one.
I did see the new one once.
Wait, I have to watch the new one.
I didn't like it. Okay, that's for next year. Sorry.
But yeah, so
we'll
please,
next year
before we wrap out of here, before we roll out of here, please tell our audience where they can find your amazing show and tell them a little bit about what you guys do. Besides win awards. We already know about the awards.
Oh my God.
We win stuff like all the time. No, we never win anything. We're the kind of people that never win anything.
Citizenship award.
Everybody gets a trophy and we get one too. Okay, so you can find us on Twitter at Two Girls on a Bench. Our podcast is called Two Girls on a Bench and it's basically on every podcatcher, Spotify, whatever, Podbean, iTunes, all that stuff.
You can find us anywhere. Our podcast is about writing, procrastination, and our friendship. So that's pretty much what we cover. We do a writing prompt. We try to get people. We eat snacks.
I love
we have
the writing
something
prompts.
Called Snack Book. And we try to get people getting their
to
juices
join in.
Flowing to write. So
yeah, we're writers that barely have enough time to even do that. So procrastination plays a big part in
you know
in
what would
our
give
lives.
You a lot more time to write? Starting a podcast gives you so much
more
time to write.
That's we don't
our
have
whole
time
thing
to write,
but we can do a podcast. That's right. No, I know. It's just the
just
whole thing
the
is another distraction.
Procrastination.
We're like, how can we put this off even longer? Let's record shit
and meet nice friends like you guys.
Absolutely. No, we love you guys.
Oh,
I gotta ask though. Justin. I gotta ask. I want to know because I can't. I could see you guys, but are you sitting on a bench?
There's a bench behind us, which is what all the crap's on.
Oh, okay. So there's the bench. All right. I just wanted to know if
covered.
That. If that...
There okay, is so actually this... a bench.
All right. So did it come from you guys sitting down to like, we're going to do our show. We're going to sit on a bench. Where did the name come from? It's a very interesting name. I have to know. I just want to know.
It came from, we've traveled all over the place together. And whenever we would sit somewhere, like on a bench, there's a particular example in Mexico. We were trying to avoid other people sitting with us. We sat on a bench with a huge hole in one side. And someone still came and sat on the hole next to us to try and like talk to us.
Or but one time we were sitting on a bench.
At Whole Foods.
And Whole Foods. And a man came running out. And he was like, my eye.
Screaming.
And then ran away. And we were like, what the hell? Like, every time we sit down at a bench, we got robbed in Madrid. We were sitting on a bench. So that's sort of our life experience.
Yeah, so it's like
bench.
Whenever we sit somewhere and people watch or we're just chilling or maybe drinking too much in Italy.
Maybe.
Shit happens. Like, weird stuff happens. And so we started to call ourselves Two Girls on a Bench because when we started writing together, we were girls. So.
Yeah, that was, you know, in the beginning when The Exorcist was made.
Yes.
Yeah.
25 years ago. But anyways, that's where it came from. And then we got it. We bought a bench. We like pooled our funds together, bought a bench, and then we put it like all over the place and took pictures of ourselves on it. And like that's literally us like in the street, like on a bench. So good times. My neighbors think we're crazy.
For sure.
We are.
You guys are absolutely wonderful. We really, really, really appreciate you joining us here. Again, #AllTheHorror over on Twitter. Follow @AllTheHorror18 over on Twitter. Dozens. There are dozens of us all collaborating, putting together horror-related content all month long. There's still, as of release day, 9 more days left in the month. So you can get 9 more episodes of amazing, amazing horror content. Ladies, thank you so, so much for joining us here on the show.
Thank you, please,
before they are literally having Joe Rogan on the show to interview him, to be like, what's it like being our bitch, Rogan?
Yeah.
Please totally. Check out their show. Again, absolutely amazing. Yeah. You guys are wonderful. Thank you very, very much for being here. Congratulations on winning People's Choice at the Podcast Awards 2018, the award that we didn't even get fucking nominated for.
Sorry, we voted for you.
We didn't even get nominated in our own category, which I was like, really? Man, it's not to take away
there's
from
always
you guys. Really,
next
it's amazing.
Year.
It's amazing you guys both got nominated and won. That's just incredible. So congratulations. Yeah. That's a really, really amazing
honored.
Achievement. And God, you guys are going to be literally popping up all over the place now because of this. Hopefully. Hope that's so. The dream, right? That's the dream?
Right? Yeah.
That's the dream.
That's the idea.
And then you quit the day jobs and leave the families behind and just go on the road as a podcast forever.
That is absolutely the idea. Bye, family.
We're podcasters now. We just live the podcaster's
my God.
Life.
We have stuff to do. Don't bother us anymore.
Oh my God. But ladies and gentlemen,
thank you.
This has been
thank you.
An absolutely fun. Amazing treat to talk Exorcist with you once, one last time. #AllTheHorror over on Twitter. Check out all this amazing horror content. Epic Film Guys have been running the 31 day horror challenge, which as of day 5, we're recording. There are already several people that are over 10 films for the month because you're all insane.
Hey, you only have to hit 15
I've
movies
one.
In the horror genre that they
I
haven't seen.
I watched one so far. The Exorcist.
But you can do all 31 days. And I know people, especially Corey Wade and Scott LaVar, they're challenging each other.
Yeah.
Scott said to Corey, I bet you can do 90 movies. And he's taking that challenge to heart. So whatever, man.
Wow. Last year that,
all the power to you.
There were people last year, Jared Taylor was one of them as well, that hit 31 movies by like day 10 in the month. Like it was October 10th and they were like, here's my 31st horror movie, bitches. Mic drop. It's insane, but hats off to
I'm
you guys.
I'm only at number 6 to me. I gotta take my time. We have this podcasting thing we have to do.
Get the fuck out of here.
Go fuck yourself.
The frog is gonna tell you where to do that. But ladies and gentlemen, we love you. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening to the show, for supporting the Epic Film Guys. You guys are absolutely amazing. For myself, for Justin, for Trisha, for Shauna, thank you all very, very much for listening, and...
we will see you motherfucking slobs at the movies.